My cousin Samantha set me up on a date with her friend Carson. I'd just gotten over a pretty bad relationship, so I wasn't interested in any dates for a while. Besides, Samantha had the tendency to date pretty terrible men, so I didn't really trust her opinion. But she was insistent. She assured me that Carson and I had a lot in common. Eventually, I gave in and agreed to meet him for dinner. When I got to the restaurant, I was shocked at how handsome Carson was. He seemed really charming too. We ordered food and had a very nice conversation. We talked about our mutual interest, especially movies and books and stuff, and it seemed as though he liked all the things that I did. It was the perfect date, but after a while, I realized that it felt too perfect. It was like Carson had memorized all my interests and was just repeating them back to me. It felt kind of rehearsed. So by the time the dinner was over, I thanked him for a wonderful meal and hurried out of the restaurant. I told him that I'd call him, but he could tell that was a lie. When I was halfway to my house, Samantha called me. She asked how the date went, expecting to hear good news, but I was honest with her. I told her that Carson was too perfect. I didn't ask her if she was the one who told him everything about me, because I assumed that she had. Samantha did not take that well. Her voice sounded panicked and she started begging me, "Please give him another chance." I asked her why she was so invested, but she didn't answer. Instead, she just kept repeating that Carson was a great guy and we were perfect for each other. Again, I told her no. Then she started crying. She was trying to hide it, but she wasn't doing a very good job. I knew that there was something she wasn't telling me, so I made a U-turn and started driving to her house. I figured I could talk to her directly and find out what was going on. As soon as I got there, I saw an extra car parked in her driveway. It was Carson's. He must have driven straight to her house after our date. I parked across the street so they wouldn't see me, and then I snuck around to the side of her house. When I looked through the window, I saw Carson screaming into Samantha's face. He looked completely unhinged, the exact opposite of how he seemed on our date. I got very close to the window and pressed my ear against the glass so I could hear what they were saying. I couldn't hear Samantha because she was mostly whimpering, but Carson's voice was pretty easy to hear. "You promised she'd like me. You said we could be together." She whimpered something, but it must not have been a good enough answer because Carson shoved her against the wall. He looked like he was really going to hurt her. I couldn't just watch anymore. I ran to the front door and into her house. They both turned to look at me. "What the hell is going on?" I asked. By that point, Samantha had fallen to the ground. "Please, get out of here," she told me. "No," Carson said. "I'm glad she's here." He started walking toward me. "Why didn't you like me? I said everything you wanted to hear." I wasn't about to defend myself. He was the one beating up on my cousin. If anyone needed to explain themselves, it was him. I watched as he reached into his pocket. For a second, I thought he was going to pull out a gun, but instead he pulled out a gold necklace. He explained that he was going to give it to me at dinner, but I had rushed off before he had the chance. He held the necklace in front of him, as if he was going to place it around my neck. I wouldn't let him get near me. I tried to walk around him and get closer to Samantha. "I don't want your necklace," I said. Carson threw the necklace across the room. His eyes narrowed in pure anger, but he wasn't looking at me anymore. He was looking at Samantha, as if she was the reason our date hadn't gone well. "Just tell me what's going on," I demanded. Samantha was too afraid to answer. Carson said, "I helped your cousin with a little problem, and for payment, she promised me you." Samantha looked up at me. "I'm so sorry," she whispered. "What little problem?" I asked. "Larry," she said. Larry was her terrible ex-boyfriend who had always been awful to her, but they'd broken up a few weeks before. At least that's what I thought. With a wide smile, Carson explained that he'd murdered Samantha's ex and disposed of his body as a favor. And in return, Samantha promised him a date with me. I turned towards Samantha and asked her if that was true. She didn't say anything, which was all the answer I needed. I ordered Carson to leave, but he wouldn't. I told him that I wasn't interested in him, that I never would be. He didn't move. Again, I told him to go away. If I leave, he said, I'm going straight to the police and telling them exactly what Samantha did to her ex. Samantha whimpered behind me. Of course, he continued, looking straight into my eyes. I would never do that if you came home with me right now. I'll do it, I said, my voice shaking. I'll go with you. I couldn't believe it. I had actually agreed to go with this monster. My brain had surrendered at that moment. For the next 1 week, Carson did unspeakable things to me. Things I am too scared to speak of. On the 8th day, I was exhausted and broken. But that night, when he ordered me to go down on him for the 100th time, I bit him.
Ow!
As the monster lay in front of me, screaming in pain, I couldn't help but stare at him. I watched him shout and ask for help. I ran straight to the police station and reported them everything. Samantha and Carson were arrested and charged with the murder of Samantha's ex-boyfriend. Samantha was sentenced to 20 years in prison, while Carson was sentenced to life without the possibility of parole. I was grateful to be alive, but I was also traumatized by what I had experienced. I spent months in therapy dealing with the aftermath of my abuse. First dates have always been awkward for me. I have the unfortunate luck of never seeming to be able to find someone I could instantly hit off with. My friend Stacy thought it would be an excellent idea to play matchmaker and pair me with someone. It's a friend of Ryle, Stacy said, referring to her boyfriend of 2 weeks whom she met on a dating app. Unlike me, Stacy was a fun and bubbly person who didn't find it very hard to hit it off instantly with someone. But Stacy insisted, and so did Ryle, and they set me up with a friend of his. His name was Jay, and I was supposed to meet him a few days later. Stacy told me about the condo that Ryle rented for them to spend the holidays in, so she wasn't here to calm my nerves on the night of the first date, and I couldn't reach her cell. I was nervous. I only knew Jay from the photo that Stacy sent me, and he seemed like a decent person. We met at Pablo's, a restaurant that I often frequented with Stacy. I needed the stability of someplace I knew and was comfortable with, but when Jay came over to meet me at the restaurant, he didn't quite like it. What's wrong? I asked, terrified that this date would turn out horrible. Jay gave me a shy smile and said, I'm vegetarian and I don't feel comfortable here. I wanted to assure him that they had a vegan menu at Pablo's, but he just wanted to leave, so I agreed. We both got into his car, which was an Audi. Jay was cute and he kept trying to make me smile and laugh, and although he wasn't half as funny as he thought he was, I still found it adorable. Besides, Jay acted nervous so much that I got concerned and asked him if he was okay. He told me that this was his first time taking a pretty girl like me on a date, and he wasn't sure if I would want to just drive around instead of eat. Now, I was hungry, but his words made me blush, and I agreed. We drove a little as he told me a story about a prank gone wrong, and I laughed at all the right times. Time seemed to fly by, so much so that he didn't notice the fact that we were driving out of town. Confused, I turned to Jay. Where are we going? His words were careful, almost too careful for them not to have been rehearsed. But at that moment, I didn't catch on. I want to show you this cool place just outside of town. I swear the air is fresher and we can see the stars so much better, Jay said. We kept going. I grew anxious as to where he was going. The night was only getting late and I practically had no idea where I was going. I'm going to ask you one more time, where are we going? My voice was shaking as I asked, and it dawned on me that I didn't know him. I had hopped in a car, but surely nothing would happen to me, right? It was as though his facade was falling, and Jay didn't seem like the nervous, nice guy who wanted to laugh anymore. If anything, he looked annoyed that I was asking where he was taking me. God, you can't keep your nosy butt out of this, he said as he pulled an unlabeled can spray and spritzed it on my face without warning. I was going to take you there peacefully, but you leave me no choice. I coughed and tried to fight it, but there seemed to be some sort of chemical mixed into it that was making me drowsy. I didn't want to close my eyes, but the next thing I knew, My world had turned black as I blacked out. I woke up to a terrible ache around my arms. Wincing, I tried to move it, but it seemed impossible to. My senses slowly returned to me, and that was when I realized that I was in the middle of the woods. Tall trees was all I could see at first, until my eyes zeroed in on a pathetic figure laying on the ground a few feet from me. It was Stacy, tied up and beaten up so much that it was hard to imagine she was still alive. I tried to scream, but the words didn't come out because of the gag around my mouth. My face whipped up to find a very angry Jay screaming at Ryle. My brain was still woozy, but I could make out part of the conversation. Ryle had killed Stacy instead of selling her off to a rich guy like it was planned, and Jay didn't seem happy about it. "What will we do if we get caught with the dead body?" Jay screamed. Ryle looked sullen. "Well, sorry, but she found out about our business and was going to tell everyone. What else was I supposed to do?" I couldn't believe what was going on. Fear clogged my mind, and I realized Stacy wasn't just dying, but already dead. And we were supposed to be sold off and shipped to a different part of the world. I wanted to puke. I wanted to cry and yell at them to bring back my best friend, but I couldn't do that. It took them a moment to realize that I was awake and that I heard everything they were saying. A moment passed by when they were wondering what they should do with me. Kill me? I was shivering on the inside. What they didn't know was that I had a knife in my back pocket, and that I was slowly, yet surely, sawing through the ropes that tied my hands back. I needed them to be distracted enough for me to escape the night of horrors. But how could I even move on from this when my own best friend was brutally murdered by the very person she was dating? They were supposed to be on a romantic holiday together, but now I couldn't even hear Stacy's laugh if I wanted to. I couldn't hold it in anymore. Tears began rolling down my eyes, and it made my vision blurry. By then, I had finally cut through the ropes and was waiting for the right time to make a run for it. Soon, they decided to bury Stacy's body before coming back for me. The second they turned around and got busy, I made a run for it. I didn't look back. I couldn't see where I was going due to the tears in my eyes, but I didn't stop. Out of sheer luck, I stumbled right onto Jay's black Audi from earlier, and the key was still in it. Cold water was running down on me as my hands slipped around the door handle to the car. By then, I was sure Jay and Ryle had noticed I was gone, and they were tracking me down. I wasn't a good driver at night, but none of that mattered as I pressed the pedal and struggled to find the road back to town. I might have escaped the horrors of that night, but it lives with me, has clung to me like a second skin. I can still smell Stacy's dead body as she passed on to death a few feet from me, and the rain as I made my way to the car before driving off. I barely had any recollection of what happened after I got to the car, but I reported the case, and it seemed as though both Jay and Ryle disappeared from the face of the earth. So did Stacy, except she left silently.
It took my parents forever to trust me to stay home alone. Do you know how embarrassing it is to be 12 years old with a babysitter? None of my friends at school had a babysitter anymore. Sure, some of them had older siblings, but still. Some of them were the oldest of their siblings, or an only child like me, and their parents let them stay home alone. My parents waited until I was 13 to stay home alone. But after the first time, I wasn't as upset they made me wait so long. I actually preferred to go to a friend's house after all that transpired. It was a stormy Friday night. My parents were going out for their anniversary. I didn't know how long they had been together at that point because I never cared to ask. I assumed it was like 15 or something because they hadn't celebrated their anniversary or even mentioned it before. It was liberating to finally be left alone. Even if all I planned to do was eat pizza and watch an R-rated movie or a bunch of South Park. "Todd!" my mom called for me before they left. She and my dad stood by the front door. I met them there. "What's up?" I said. "Remember, if you need anything, and I mean anything, you just call. I will have my phone on me the whole night, okay?" Yeah, I got it. Just have a fun night," I shrugged her off. "Make sure to stay out as late as possible," I joked. My mom rolled her eyes, kissed me on the cheek, and was off. After they left, I threw a pizza in the oven and went down to the basement. We live in a one-story ranch with a basement. My bedroom and everything was in the basement. It wasn't huge, so it felt like my den. A TV, couch, and ping pong table were on one side. On the other was my bedroom and bathroom. Small rectangular windows lined the top of the ceiling. I turned on the TV and started flipping through the channels to see what was on. I thought another teenager would throw a party or have a girl over, and here I was alone, watching TV. If I were to do something like that and get caught, though, my parents would never leave me alone again. Before I could really take advantage of being alone, I needed to figure out things, like when they would come home. I didn't even plan on going near the liquor cabinet. For all I knew, my mom would be calling me every hour to check on me. The door to the basement was across from the front door, so I made my way up the stairs. When I opened the front door, no one was there. I stepped out on the porch and looked around, but it was dead silent. No one was around. I dismissed it as a ding-dong ditch situation and went back downstairs. Right when I sat back down on the couch, someone knocked. Back up the stairs I went, annoyed this time. I opened the door and again, no one was there. "Hello?" I said to see if someone would respond or if I could hear giggling from the bushes or something. There was nothing, just more silence. Not even the wind rustled the leaves. I headed back inside. Right as I opened the door to the basement, someone pounded on the front door. They turned the knob and shook the door. I turned around, stunned. My heart pounded against my chest and my hands began to tremble. Our front door had no window, so I couldn't see who or what it was. Quietly, I tried to creep up to the door to look out the peephole, but again, there was no one. They didn't have much time to run away, but they could still be standing beside the door out of view, I thought. I went to the window in the living room and looked out. There wasn't a living thing in sight. I checked the front and back sliding glass doors to ensure they were locked. For extra security, I put the wooden rod in the back door, so even if someone could jimmy the lock, the rod would stop the door. I put a chair in front of the front door to give the illusion of extra security. I texted my mom to ask her to let me know when they were headed back so I could move the chair. I didn't want them to know I got spooked. Maybe my friends were playing a prank on me or something. I told them at school that tonight the house was mine. They live nearby, and they would love an opportunity to spook me. The idea that it was them soothed me. By this time, my pizza was ready. I pulled it out of the oven and cut it up. With my pizza and a Mountain Dew, I resumed my night in the basement. I ended up watching South Park. I was hoping for some R-rated movie that had some ladies with big jugs, but I couldn't find anything. I settled in and started enjoying my pizza. As I started on my last slice, out of the corner of my eye, I saw movement in one of the windows. My head shot in that direction, and there was nothing other than darkness. I turned my head back to the TV, and in the window above the TV, there was a face of a scruffy pale man with wide green eyes staring at me. My body froze. I rubbed my eyes, hoping it was just a weird light thing, but the man remained. He didn't blink even once. Slowly, I got up, turning away from him when I was close enough to the stairs to bolt up them. I reached the top of the stairs and pulled my phone out to call my mom. As the phone rang, I went through everything I had done to secure the house so that the guy couldn't get in. I rounded the corner to the kitchen, and the man was pounding against the sliding glass door. "Todd," the scruffy man said. How did he know my name? He kept repeating my name and hitting the door. I ran to hide in my parents' bathroom, where there wasn't any windows. Sitting on the floor in the bathroom, I could hear the man pounding on the door and yelling my name. I had to call my mom 3 times before she answered. Once I told her what happened, she immediately called the police for me and headed home. The police came and took the man into custody. That night, my mom revealed to me that the guy was actually my biological father, who had been institutionalized after stalking my mother when she became pregnant with me. He had substance issues that apparently fried his mind. She didn't want me to think I would turn out like my father, so she kept him a secret. Honestly, after being so scared that I almost peed my pants, I wasn't that upset with her.
My name is Zoe, and I'm 25 years old. I work as a cleaning lady. Yes, I know. It's not most people's wildest dream, but I enjoy it. It makes me happy and relaxes me, and allows me to work without talking to people. I guess it gives me a sense of control in my life. Plus, the payment is actually decent, and I don't have one single boss. Instead, I work at several different places, from family homes to bigger companies. No shame and no regrets. I am a bit of a Taco Bell fanatic, though. It is one of my forbidden pleasures. Well, at least it used to be. Until recently. I used to go 3 times per week to Taco Bell. Life does take its turns. Last year, I happened to meet the manager of the place. I was just sitting there finishing my chicken burrito when a man, very well dressed, came up to me.
Hello, my name is Ted Melisanti, and I'm the manager. I see you come here often, and I thank you for your preference, he said.
Oh, hi. I'm guilty. I love your food. Now I'm actually embarrassed, I replied shyly.
Please, don't feel embarrassed. Enjoy your meal, Ted said.
Before Ted could leave, I grabbed the moment to ask him if they had any openings for a cleaning lady.
Yes, we're always on the lookout for enthusiastic laborers. My bad. I mean employees, Ted said. But we don't have any openings for this specific restaurant. You see, I run several businesses, and my main office does have requirement for a rock star like you.
Wow, that is definitely an unexpected proposal.
So how do we proceed? I asked. Great. So, how is next Saturday for you?
6 p.m.?
I can give you the address to my office. It's not far from here.
That's good for me, I said.
Excellent. Here's my card. I'll be waiting for you then. What's your name?
Zoe.
Nice to meet you, Zoe. I'll see you on Saturday, Ted said, as he went back from wherever he came from. I was thrilled. Ted was actually kind of attractive. He wasn't the typical good-looking man, but he was tall, well-built, and there was something in his eyes and voice that I just found charismatic and strong. This first talk I had with Ted was on Tuesday, so I couldn't wait for Saturday. The excitement made me work even faster. I was still living with my mother. She definitely noticed that I was feeling enthusiastic about something, and I ended up telling her.
Oh, that sounds so good, dear, but just be careful. These top-notch men, who think they own the world, you're very pretty. Just be smart and safe, okay? My mother said.
Yes, I know. It's a wicked world out there.
I'm kidding, but you are right, I answered. Of course, my mother's advice was useful, but I have no brothers and sisters, and my father died when I was 19, so my mother was a bit overprotective. In any case, Saturday, 6 p.m. sharp, I arrived at Ted Melisanti's office. I was received by a secretary. Everything was legit and normal. The building looked great, and there were several people inside. A few minutes later, I was alone with Ted in his office. We agreed to a $2,000 payment. It was good enough for the amount of work.
Cheers to new beginnings, Ted said as he offered me a glass of wine.
Thank you, Ted. You are amazing, I said. The next couple of hours passed by in a rush. The wine tasted very exotic and strong. And Ted was even stronger. He was gentle initially, but then devoured me like a tiger. After my special meeting with Ted got over, his secretary paid me in advance, $2,000, all cash. I was super elated and proud that evening. My new job was interesting. The work hours were less, and every evening, Ted offered me his special wine and love. Things couldn't get any better, I thought. One evening after we were done,
"Thank you for all your help, Zoe. How are you feeling?"
"I feel great. Thank you as well. I guess I'll be seeing you tomorrow then," I said while dressing up.
"I'm afraid not. I'm leaving this place. I'm shifting to a new state to manage this new office of mine. It was very nice to meet you, Zoe, Ted said as we hugged. I was heartbroken, but I always knew our special relationship would end one day. Oh, okay, I see. Good luck, Ted. You too. Who knows? Maybe we'll meet again in the future. All the best. 2 days later, as I was having dinner at home with my mom, I started listening to voices in my head. Creepy, sinister voices telling me to stab my mother with the knife I was using to cut my meat. I tried to shake those voices away, but it was useless, and things were about to get weirder. As I looked at my mom, I saw her eyes melting. Her whole face was becoming disfigured, and her mouth became huge. Then, I heard her say, "I'm going to kill you, and then devour you, you insolent, ungrateful brat." I screamed in panic and started to hit my or the monster she had become. I punched her and even broke a glass on her head. Eventually, I snapped out of that trance and saw my mother on the floor. She was no longer a monster. Her face was disfigured, yes, but only due to the beating. "Oh no. Mom? Mom!" I shouted. She wasn't responding. I immediately called 911. My mother was still alive, but her brain had suffered severe damage. The doctor told me that she will never have a full recovery. She will be mentally disabled for the rest of her life. I explained what happened and was taken into custody by the police. Apparently, I had a psychotic episode. My blood was tested, and a strange substance was found there. It was concluded that it was the reason for my attack. When asked if I had taken anything, "No, but I have been drinking this exotic wine quite regularly. Do you think it had something to do with that?"
"Could be. We'll investigate. Tell us about everything," the police officer demanded. After the following information, the police found that Ted and his personal assistants had disappeared. "This confirms our strong suspicion of your psychotic outbreak was related to something that these people gave you. This, at least, will probably keep you safe from criminal prosecution regarding your mother," a policeman said. I was relieved, but now I have to live with what I did with my mother. A few months later, I received a letter. There was no address, not even mine, just an envelope. Inside there was a note, simple, computer typed. It was from Ted Molizanti. It said, "Hello, Zoe. I'm sorry to tell you that you were a lab rat to an experiment of mine. I'm trying to develop a med through which I can control or influence people's minds. I guess you were one of the perfect choices for the trial. You were part of something big. You would love to know that unlike my other subjects, I genuinely liked you. I'm also sorry for your mother, but such is life. Chaos happens. Part of evolution, you know. The government already knows about me. I have friends. Of course, this piece of paper won't really help the cops. Plus, Ted Molizanti is not my real name. Take care."